Hi, and welcome to this episode of Brainy Moms. I'm Dr. Amy Moore, along with Terry Miller, coming to you today from sunny Colorado. We are both so excited about today's guest, a very brainy mom, Dr. Whitney Caceres. Dr. Whitney is a private practice pediatrician and founder of Modern Mommy Doc, where she guides professional women to find success in the workplace and at home. She's the author of The Working Mom Blueprint, Winning at Parenting Without Losing Yourself, and The New Baby Blueprint, Caring for You and Your Little One. As a mama mindset thought leader and coach, she teaches working moms how to go from conflicted to centered. Welcome, Dr. Whitney.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Terry has a million questions for you. So let's just turn it over to her and get started.
Okay. Before I even ask you anything, for our listeners, I want everyone to know that the book we're talking about today, The Working Mom's Blueprint, I am working today, but I was mostly a stay-at-home mom, and even now am only a part-time working mom. And so I want to say to all the listeners, this book should have a different title, or maybe you can republish the entire book. Just change the cover, because it is so relevant. I mean, everything, every chapter, the practical suggestions, even though this is geared towards working moms, it's completely relevant for those of us who are working moms, who are working moms working at home with our families, that are stay-at-home moms. And we are all working just as hard. We are all working moms, no matter where our workplace is. And so I want to say, listeners, don't tune out if you think this is only about working moms, if you're a stay-at-home mom, because that's my experience as well. And this information is so beautiful, so encouraging, very relevant. So
thank you so much. And you know what? You're absolutely right. I tell my husband all the time that he could pick this up and like learn a couple things from it, because the book is written in partnership with the American Academy of Pediatrics. And the cool thing about working with them is that they, of course, have all their policies that are vetted via research. They have councils and committees and all the things. And so they do not let you put out something unless it is 100% by the book. And they really wanted to make sure that in addition to talking about how do moms in general, and I agree, like, let's just get rid of the word, honestly, working mom, because we're all working moms.
Yes.
How do moms make it through and really thrive, not just survive in their motherhood experience, but then also how do we help our kids with things like healthy activity and good sleep and how to be kids who are able to do chores and all those things. Yes. So we included all that in there so that that was really mom focused and kid focused too. Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say, when Terry mentioned that, it reminded me of how Excedrin packages, you know, the same painkillers with just different names. You know, they might tweak one little ingredient, or, you know, and I said, so she could actually just make a second cover, the stay-at-home mom blueprint, and have the exact same message. And so we love that. Anyway, back to you.
Very, very relevant. Yeah. I want our listeners to know that. Don't tune out, because this is great information. So right at the beginning of your book, and this may have even been in the introduction, Dr. Whitney, you talked about, you actually quoted a colleague, and it was a work situation where the director or manager or whatever was saying, you know, well, be encouraging. You want to encourage your patients and your parents. And then you said a colleague responded with this: well, it's good to be encouraging, but it's also okay to not be okay. And we need to tell parents that. That's what parents need to hear right now. And I love that, because I think so often in leadership and from people in authority, like our doctors, our pediatricians, we hear, well, just have a positive attitude. And sometimes, especially through this COVID stuff, we're ready to pull our hair out. If somebody's telling me to just have a positive attitude, I want to say, I'm sorry, shut up, I'm leaving. And so I want you to tell the readers, of course, it's in your book, but not readers. I want you to tell our listeners, what's kind of your story? How did you get to the point of being able to let go of that obsession we have as moms for doing it all for perfection? What's your story?
Yeah. So first of all, you're absolutely right. And the mini story of what happened there with that colleague is that it was the beginning of COVID. Everything was shutting down. Every single parent was coming around and saying, like, I can't get my kids off screens. I'm going crazy. I feel like my kids are having this horrible time. And that it was kind of an administrative person who came in to our executive committee meeting. I'm on the executive committee at my work, and said in my private practice, and said, now it's really important that we're role models, and we just need to be super positive and tell everybody, you know, encouraging. They're looking to us to be encouraging. And our psychologist actually said, you know, yes, and we're all having a hard time. As parents, we're having a hard time. Let's not have this toxic positivity that is about let's shine it on, everything is good. Because when you're actually able to attune to those very real feelings that you have and their very real conflict that comes up for all moms, for all parents, for all human beings during COVID and in general, that's actually much more powerful and life-changing. And what happened for me is I was one of those people who actually believed that everything could be okay as long as I believed it could all be okay. That believed that if I kind of like willed it to be or had enough commitment or hard work that I could make anything happen. And I was able to really lean into my work as a pediatrician before I had kids. I was always kind of this go-getter. Like I started a little business when I was about 8 years old at a horse stable across from my parents' house. And I just go to door to door and knock on people's doors, put flyers, and Saturdays, Sundays, I'd be like shoveling the poop. And I earned like a huge Barbie collection, right, in 2 months. So I had that hard work, that tenacity inside of me and that focus. And in pediatrics, that's really expected of you as well. And I'm sure people can relate if they are working in more of a, you know, career focused job where I wanted to lean in, you know, I felt like I needed to be a team member and I liked it because it made me feel really purposeful and I like seeing patients. And so if someone said, can you see an extra kid who has a fever at the end of the day? Like, yeah, on it. There was an extra email that needed to be written and it made me stay a couple hours late, no problem. And it all worked out fine for me because when I wasn't a mom, I could rest and recuperate on the weekends and at night. It was kind of no big deal.
Right.
My husband had his own thing going on professionally. And then I had a baby and motherhood really changed every single thing for me. Yeah. My first daughter was really like, love her, but I call her like a little hot mess because poor thing, she did not sleep more than 45 minutes at a time for the first 13 weeks of her life. We had to work to get her to sleep more than 45 minutes at a time. She had colic. She spit up over every single piece of clothing that I had. I suffered through really severe postpartum depression and anxiety, in part because of the sleeplessness that I had, all those sleepless nights. And if that wasn't bad enough, then as she became a toddler and kind of got into her older years, I thought things would get better, and they really didn't. She had really major tantrums all the time. She had a really hard time with potty training. She would get very anxious. She's pretty particular. And we thought she had autism in the beginning. And we went and did all of this testing and investigating and got all the support with psychologists and with psychiatrists and parent coaches and, you know, specialists to see if there's something wrong with her iron levels and all these things.
Right.
And she, you know, it ended up in the end having this really severe anxiety disorder that was just showing up as kind of like fight or flight. Like she'd get real mad or she'd get real withdrawn. And I found myself having just this well of need in my home and in my family. I added on a second kid eventually. My husband had stuff he was dealing with. I had my own stuff. And then I also, though, became more senior in my job. And so I had this well of need in my office and these expectations on me that I would really, really give it my all there and be committed and just work harder and kind of pretend like I was okay all the time, even when I wasn't.
So you're burning the candle. You're burning the candle like at both ends and in the middle in a couple of places.
Yes. And I think in the middle is probably like the most important piece of that, because it really was like, I'm like this yo-yo on a string. I keep on like swinging from, you know, side to side, or like a rubber band that keeps on just being stretched in different directions. Yeah. And I mean, I snapped in the middle. And when my daughter was 12 months old, I stomped into my bedroom where my husband was and said, like, I can't take this anymore. Like, we got to go on a trip. You know, like, I left my kid for a week with my mom because it was like so much. I found myself in the shower. I remember, when she was about 3 years old, I was in the shower and I'd had all these meetings at work and my husband and I had been fighting and we'd had a really horrible meltdown, with my oldest. And I just was sobbing and crying, like feeling like I am constantly conflicted inside and constantly burnt out, constantly stressed. Right. And, cause I, you know, you try to soothe yourself when that, in that situation where I would do silly things like watch Netflix all night long or scroll through my Instagram all night long, but things that didn't really serve me. Or I do things like be really like mean inside my head to myself to be like, you're like a bad mom and a bad worker, all those things. And so I decided over time, like there has to be a different way for myself. But then also as I started talking to all these other moms in my office that I was seeing week in and week out, I felt like, actually, I'm not alone.
Yes.
Almost every other mom working and non-working, maybe they don't have this extreme situation that I do with my child, but they have that sense of inner conflict, of juggling, but never feeling like they're effective.
Yeah.
Right. I was completely resonating with your story as you were going step by step by step. And I thought, I lived that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's so common. So common.
You did, Amy, with kids with health problems, medical problems, issues, and then juggling
depression,
your...
all of that. Sure. Yeah. And trying to juggle a career.
Career.
Completely resonates with me.
Because I can say, okay, I resonate with all of that too. But what I wasn't juggling was a career. With later kids, the hard thing is that my career was homeschooling. And so I think for some stay-at-home moms, that is the career. And so I was juggling that. I'm homeschooling my kids. I'm with them all the time. So I'm a full-time teacher, you know, and then all the other things, but it's the same thing. What you're saying, you're not alone. I think we as moms, we are so pulled. And I know every generation thinks, oh, it's harder than the last. But I think we as women, ever since what were the commercials? I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan. Jolie, you know, ever since the days of that commercial, when we started being told by the media that we can do it all, I do think it's harder. We are stretched thinner. We are burning the candle every which way. And your message here in this book, you give practical advice. The blueprint's fantastic. But your message that you start off with is that we can let go of that perfect. We can't do it all.
Yeah. And in fact, I would go further to say, like, if you do not let go of that perfect, like, Lord help you, you will be able to keep on probably spinning the plates, because as moms, we're good. This is not about capability of doing the work. Right. As moms, we are totally capable of, like, every single day, we got the checklist, sign them up for camp, do the dishes, make sure the laundry's done, make sure that I, like, meet up with my friend for the coffee. But, like, this feeling of, I don't want to be too dramatic, but, like, this dying inside that happens.
Yeah.
That's gonna happen if you don't kind of let go of something or create a framework that allows you to decide, what are the things that actually really matter to me? Where do I want to place my time and attention? And I was going to go back where, what you said about the stay-at-home moms, the homeschooling moms, or the moms that are just staying at home and their kids are in school. That as American women, we bear productivity. We wear it like a badge, like of honor, of like, I am doing, then I am successful. That is success. And so no matter if you are a working mom or a stay-at-home mom, we all tend to find ways to fill our time and to, like, earn that productivity badge. And so you're right that this applies to everyone, because we're all at risk of doing that unless we're really mindful.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump in here with a question. You wrote, you can't do everything if you want to do anything well. Mm-hmm. And so that reminded me of the phrase, if you chase two squirrels, they both get away.
Yeah.
So what is your advice to moms for how do you choose? How do you choose what to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it really comes down to understanding your priorities and understanding the things that if you looked back at your life when you're 80, what would be the things that you would be the proudest of, or that you would feel like, yes, I'm so glad I made an investment in those areas. So I actually, even, you know, as we were writing the book, we started creating this framework that now at Modern Mommy Doc, we call, your centered life. That's basically, if you imagine kind of you as a circle in the middle and the things that are important to you as a circle. And then, and for me, these are things like contribution to other women, my family connections, travel, exploration, mental health, all of those things. If you're in the circle, there's still a box around you that's the rest of your life of all these things that have to get done that do have to be accomplished either by you or by somebody else, mm-hmm. but don't have to define you. And so in the book, we go through a whole like prioritization exercise of thinking about what things right now do you spend your time and energy on? And if you had an ideal life, where would you spend your time and energy? How do those line up? Kind of doing an audit to see, gosh, am I actually living according to the things that I care the most about? And then figuring out ways to push the outside of that circle further out so that it doesn't encroach upon you and like your soul, right? And some practical examples are things like, in the book, we go into this in great detail, but automating and delegating, right? Mm-hmm. Like those are efficiency techniques. So what are things that a computer could be doing for me? Can you have it so that you use online grocery shopping and someone else delivers your food for
you?
Yes. And what about if you do go to the grocery store yourself, or if you order online, just letting go of the idea that you have to make really fancy meals during the middle of the week and having it be pre-marinated chicken skewers with some broccoli and a loaf of French bread, right? Like that's healthy. And that takes that off of your mental load plate. I have like Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, it's the exact same meals every single week for my kids.
So good.
And yeah. And if my husband wants to make a fancy meal, like Lord love him, let him do that. But I don't need to do that. That's not in my wheelhouse.
Right.
Letting my husband have a piece of the parenting pie, making sure that we have a common understanding and that we're using compassionately assertive language with each other. Like, hey, these are the things that are on your responsibility list. These are the things on my responsibility list, and letting him really take charge on the things on his list. Those things help a mom too, to kind of like take that off her plate, give it to somebody else. Jancy Dunn, I love her. She's like my favorite person. And she wrote How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids, which is another book that could be retitled and given to like every type of relationship person in every type of relationship, right?
I'm writing it down. How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's great because she did is she and her husband went through this process of she talked to therapists, she talked to people who are on like the FBI SWAT team as to how they talk with like terrorists in negotiation tactics to actually get someone to listen to you when you're in like a high stress situation. And one of the biggest things she talks about in that book is this idea of maternal gatekeeping, which is the idea that as moms, biologically, we a lot of times will have this tendency to, when our babies are first born, to our partners are giving our babies a bath and we're like, oh my gosh, don't drown the baby. Uh-huh. Stop doing it that way. Lift your head up, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens? Our partner like takes a giant step back, rolls their eyes in my husband's world, walks out of the room.
Says we do it.
Yeah. 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 They throw their hands in the air.
Yeah.
Fine. I can't do it right. You take care of it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and then we're like, I have just shot myself in the foot. I'm such a ding dong. Why did I do this?
Yes. Yes. Because now, of course, you're going to be the one doing all that.
Uh-huh.
You know? So there are moments that my husband's not a pediatrician. He doesn't have the developmental peds background that I do. So there are times that he says things in a way that doesn't jive with how I would say it to my kids. You know, yeah. It's like less than ideal. It's not, you know, harmful to them. It's just not my style. I have learned to, like, if I can't have a blank face, to literally like pick up a book or like start doing something that's not judgmental.
Achoo! Like that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm just coughing, honey. I'm not making a face at you.
Exactly. If he serves them cupcakes for dinner, you know what I mean? Like, it's fine. They're going to survive.
Right. Yes.
Instead of getting on his case about every single thing that isn't exactly the way that I would do it, that matters with our partners to yeah. take the load off of us. And then I think the third thing really, there's a ton of things in the book, but the third thing is, in terms of lessening kind of our load there, is learning to say no by learning to say yes to the things you actually do want to take care of or do want to spend time on. So as American moms, it's incredibly difficult. We feel so guilty to say no when people ask us to be on that third committee or, you know, join the PTA when that's not our thing. Right.
Right.
But if I know in my head, I'm saying no to this because I'm saying yes to me listening to Hamilton with my kids in the car, singing with our hands and doing all the motions, like, I feel pretty good about that decision.
Right. Suddenly the no isn't so negative, because I love how you expressed this. The no is actually a yes. It's just a yes to something else.
More right. important to you.
Right.
Right. To your family.
More
right.
important to you. Yeah. And that helps you reach your overall goals, whether that's in business or in your relationship with your kids. And that comes back to, I'm just always kind of, with grace, reevaluating, okay, I could do the dishes right now and get really stressed out and kind of like huff and puff at my kid when she asks me to pay attention to her, or I could sit and read her the book she wants me to read.
Right.
Do the dishes later, mm-hmm. you know?
You're such a wise woman. You only have two kids and you look so young. Okay, listeners, if you can't see her, if you're not watching this on Facebook, you look so young and your itty bitty one came in at the beginning. And I'm thinking, how did you get so wise? I didn't start learning these things till I had like my sixth kid, you know? It's just, yeah, you have been
you
given
know what?
Much wisdom.
Yeah, it is trial by fire. You know, I think Brené Brown talks about how, I'm going to botch the quote. I need to write it down so that I can tell people it exactly. So please don't come at me for not knowing the quote exactly. But she talks about how your biggest struggle and trial will later be someone else's survival guide.
Yes.
Yeah. And I, with my daughter, to be perfectly honest, I mean, we've gone through days that have just felt like I'm in a war, you know, have felt like I look at other parents and I'm thinking, you are sitting back drinking pina coladas at a pool. And I am in like Vietnam in a trench here.
Yeah.
And I think the silver lining to all of that, to be honest, like, you know, pain and struggle. And I am so privileged in so many ways. So many people have it harder than I do, but in those emotional pain and trauma has been just these things that have been like, I could either sink or swim. Mm-hmm. And I've decided over time to like get the help that I needed. The help from therapists, the help from parent coaches, the help from psychologists. I mean, we are like, we got like an army of 30, you know, around us here to help us to learn. So it's not all me. It's really being open to that idea that I cannot ever make the chaos be completely gone in my home or in my family because of this really unique special needs kiddo that I have. but I can like calm the chaos inside me, and I can create a life that I feel proud of. And I think that's true for so many moms. Like, you can't control the things that happen with your kids or their learning differences, or if they're differently wired, or sickness that happens, or COVID.
Right.
But you can 100% control your overall approach to being responsive versus reactive to those things that happen to you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Beautiful.
Hey, we need to take a break.
Deep, real quick.
That was good.
That was great. All right. We need to take a break so I can read a word from our sponsor. Thousands of students with reading struggles have fallen even further behind due to the impact of COVID-19. The NWEA has reported that students are only experiencing about 70% of the learning gains in reading relative to a normal school year. But there is hope. LearningRx one-on-one brain training programs are designed to target and strengthen the cognitive skills that we rely on for reading, spelling, and writing. LearningRx programs have helped thousands of students with reading difficulties and dyslexia see life-changing gains in reading. In an analysis of results from nearly 10,000 LearningRx clients, students on average saw their reading skills improve by 3.5 years. Your child may or may not achieve the same results. But if your child has fallen behind or is struggling with reading, visit learningrx.com today to learn more. That's learningrx.com. And we are back talking with Dr. Whitney Caceres, pediatrician and author of the brand new book, The Working Mom Blueprint, Winning at Parenting Without Losing Yourself.
And to reiterate after our message, this book is wonderful for all moms, whether you're a working at-home mom, a career mom, a working homeschooling mom, a stay-at-home mom. This book is incredibly, incredibly powerful. I come from more of that stay-at-home mom perspective, even though I do work part-time now. And I want to also say to our listeners, if you are like many moms, you may order a book, be so motivated to read a book. You pick it up and you read a little bit, you poke around, you can't really finish it. Okay, so I'm going to give you the insider's tip. And so, Dr. Whitney, please forgive me that I'm not... I'm not going to say to these moms out there, you have to read every word. I think that once moms get into it, they are going to want to read more and more and start flipping through to some of those practical ideas. But so the insider's tip, I would say, start off with the introduction, because you are going to be so encouraged and inspired by Dr. Whitney's perspectives on not having to be perfect. I wrote notes to myself at the beginning, and these are not your words. This is how I interpreted it. And so what it spoke to me is I need to spend less time doing more and more time doing less. And so that was a takeaway, even just in the introduction. Like, I spend so much time doing busy, striving for perfection, and I can let that go. And then I want to say to the listeners, to moms, then skip to chapter 3. Okay, because this gets me. Chapter 3, I think it was page 20. You start talking about appearance after you have your baby. And I'm literally reading, you're going to get a kick out of this, moms. I'm literally reading these couple of paragraphs, and I'm like, are you kidding me? That you witch. You're telling me I'm supposed to look great 2 months after? I mean, I'm getting all upset because you're clearly being sarcastic.
Glad you caught that. I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah. No, it's hilarious. And so then I end up like almost crying myself silly as you go through paragraph after paragraph, talking about all the ways the world says that we have to bounce back from having children. We have to bounce back into being a great wife, a great friend, pretty, successful, career, busy, all these things. And it is fantastic. So I would say jump right into chapter 3 so that you can laugh at all of the things we really take as truth in our lives as moms. Mm-hmm. Let's laugh at it. Let's be sarcastic. Let's put it all down there and say, this is ridiculous. This is hilariously ridiculous. And we can't do it. Why do we think we can do it all? Chapter 3, we can't do it all. okay, so let it go. And I love that you then go on in chapter 3 to talk about truly living according to our priorities. And yeah, your practical tool in there, the chart thing you did, the comparison, so good, so valuable. And I know you just talked about that a minute ago. So I'm just reiterating, not only is the author bragging on that process, but a reader is bragging on that process. And I did some notes for myself. I didn't do 2 complete charts, but it was, I mean, I'm 51 now. I have 9 children. I have done a lot wrong and I've learned to do a lot better. And I have gone through choices where I thought one path was the way and then found another path. And I want to say that unbelievably, I was able to look at my notes in that chart and go, I'm not too far off.
That's awesome.
They're lining up pretty good. But hello, Whitney, you're what, like 22? I mean, you're just this gorgeous young thing.
Okay. So this is always the joke in my office is that I look like I'm 12. And yeah. I'm 40. I'm 40 years old, I look like I'm 12. And I always tell people when they're about to have a new baby and they meet with me before that for these prenatal visits to kind of do a meet and greet, see if they like me. And I go, well, how will the hospital know if you're supposed to be my pediatrician? I go, just tell them at the hospital that you picked the pediatrician that's the 6-year-old. And they will know exactly who you're talking about. So yeah, I can't hide it. You know, even with makeup on, I look young, but that's okay. I mean, I think I'll be happy when I'm 70.
Absolutely. Sure. So I'm bragging on you right now. You look amazing. So that's not a bad thing. But just saying that there is that comparison chart, there's so much wisdom in that you are bringing to moms that I want to say, oh my goodness, don't wait till you're 51. You know, that you can begin this process, dig into that. What are my priorities so that, like you talked about, Dr. Whitney, my no isn't a negative no. My no is this beautiful positive yes to something else. And the guilt of that no disappears.
Yeah.
There can be such freedom in that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, the thing is, when we don't take the time to say or make the choice, I should say, because it's not just about time. If we don't make the choice to say yes to ourselves, and there's a whole self-care chapter here
that is
way beyond like mani-pedi
segue. That's what we're getting into next. So go on.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, you know, we build resentment because there's only so long that we can like do the work and have that feeling inside of like, I'm doing all the work. And then it's like an Instapot, you know, the lid, it just like keeps on building pressure underneath. And then eventually it pops. And then we go through this cycle of we're irritable. We get more frustrated with our kids. We aren't able to do our work as effectively if we are in a career. We aren't able to concentrate and be present with our partner if we have one. And then we feel bad. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to doing again, I better work harder, work again, just like take my own needs out of it. And then that cycle keeps on perpetuating. And when we take care of ourselves and put our needs first, our deep inner core needs, the things that bring us joy, that remind us of who we are and what makes us content and peaceful, that changes that cycle and makes it so then we are able to A, come back to our priorities time and time again, and B, to give to other people in the ways that they need us to give.
Yeah. Well, you segued exactly into what I had next on my notes that I would tell listeners, I would tell moms, if you get a hold of this book, intro, chapter 3, and then straight on into chapter 4, which is about self-care. The specifics that you give, the specific examples are so beautiful, so encouraging. Dr. Amy and I just did a podcast. Let's see, it was episode 106 on the sort of the argument of momcation or mommy sabbatical. You know, is it realistic? Is it necessary? And it was great.
Is it anybody selfish?
Right. Is it selfish?
Right.
Yeah. And so if anybody wants to go back and listen to that, we just about argued. So
yeah, it's pretty lively because I think they're super selfish and Terry's a big fan and proponent of them. And so it is a lively discussion.
So this, I loved yeah, her chapter 4 and chapter 5, because Dr. Whitney, you talk about very individually unique ways of pursuing self-care that it doesn't, you specifically talk about, it does not have to be this big, long vacation, mommy sabbatical getaway, that there are different things for different women, different moms, and in different seasons of life that are needed to bring that self-care. And those two chapters are so helpful and encouraging, helping us understand why we need it, helping us understand how we can achieve that. You offer encouragement and practicality. I love your story of, I call it the mommy sabbatical, the mommy rest. I can't remember what term you used.
Yeah, mommy vacation, I think is what we called it.
Okay, that you had at home. I love this. So that your husband and kids went away. And so my husband was just recently asking about for Mother's Day, what do you want to do? And I was like, gosh, honey, I've been away. You know, I had a great time in Florida. I just took a wonderful mommy sabbatical in Florida. I'm all tan. and my husband was saying, what do you want to do? And I said, gosh, you know, he said, do you want a break? And I said, yeah, but I don't want to go anywhere. You know, sometimes the most restful thing I can have is, will you just take the kids away? And can I just be at home all by myself? Mm-hmm. Can I just do what I want to do at home? And so love that story in chapter 4 of your mommy vacation at home and how you discovered time to have coffee with friends and you discovered all these things that were self-care for you that you were then able to carry forward. So that was so beautiful.
Yeah, no, it really is true that time, and we didn't actually designate it as a mommyhood vacation for me. It just kind of ended up that way because I had to work and my husband had vacation time. We were trying to get some time with my in-laws for my kiddos. And so my husband took them to California. This was a couple years ago, took them to California and they stayed there at the beach and I was at home. And so I actually was working, but it was kind of like a pre-kid, like throwback and that I thought I was going to be like, ooh, I'm going to do all these exciting things. I'm going to go to this, like, you know, amazing bar or do all these things. And like the things that I ended up doing were so boring. They were just having, on the surface, having coffee with a friend. They were on Saturday. Nobody woke me up.
Right.
They were, you know, like, I listened to my music loud on the speakers without a kid going, turn that off. Mm-hmm. You know, so Dua Lipa was like busting through the house. And so I agree with both of you. I think I'm on both of your teams, you know, on the mommyhood vacation, because that experience taught me that really most of the things that I crave are practices I can build into my daily life, even with my kids around. And also there are moments where I have needed more of a big break. And sometimes that big break has even been with one kid and not the other people in my family. You know, I took my oldest up to Orcas Island, which is in Washington. And we spent 3 days just having kind of some special time. I talk about that at the end of the book, that was also a sort of a vacation just because there's less competing interests. I could just be focused on her and on me. And I've done that with my youngest since as well. So I think there's all kinds of different ways to get that rest and rejuvenation back and that reconnection to yourself and to just feeling less conflicted.
Yeah. And just that self-care. I love that you said something along the lines of, I don't know, how did I put in my notes? I put it something like, I'm the only one that can make sure I get the self-care I need. that it's our responsibility as moms. We take care of everyone else. But if we don't step back and take care of ourselves as well, like you talked about in the book, there's just nothing to give. And that self-care is going to look completely different for every person in different seasons of life. When finances are different, your kids are different, whatever. That's so powerful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, you asked me earlier in the first segment of this about like, what are the things that, how do I get all this wisdom? I think one of the biggest things actually that I've learned about in the last 3 years is this idea of mindful self-compassion, which is Kristen Neff. She has a book called Self-Compassion, which is so powerful for moms, you know, that just talks about basically attuning to your feelings, kind of like emotion coaching yourself, like you would a kid who's having a really big flipped lid or big emotions. And that idea of being able to like listen to yourself and what are you feeling? What do you need? What, you know, and sometimes it's like, I need to pee, or I need to have a drink of water, or I need to step out of this room because you guys are really making me feel super frustrated. Or sometimes it is, I need 2 or 3 days by myself without any noise or people touching me and trying to like put their hand down my shirt, you know,
children and husbands.
Exactly. Yes. Everybody leave me alone. Leave my body alone. Okay. Yes. But, it is really different. And it really is when you learn how to attune to yourself and respect yourself and decide like, I'm worth it as an individual human being to have my needs met too, and to kind of show up for myself in terms of time, but then also in terms of what I want in my partner relationship and in how I approach my division of labor and where I place my energies.
Yeah. Well, so listeners, fellow moms, I would say grab this book, order it wherever you can, go get it at a bookstore as soon as it comes out. Get a hold of this book. There are in the following chapters that we don't have time today to go over every detail, but Dr. Whitney offers incredibly specific and encouraging ideas about dinner time, how to make dinner time less stressful, how to do more with less with more. I don't know, but how to kind of balance that so you're not losing yourself. Sleep habits, how to help manage sleep time, how to help bring your spouse, your family, other people on board. Lost my earphones. How to bring people on board so that you've got the support you need. So there's lots of just encouragement and practicalities. And the overall, I'm going to take a leap here. And again, just from my personal notes, Dr. Whitney, I'm going to say the overall message that I walked away with is something that I say a lot. And Amy, you'll recognize this. I say a lot, well, let's not ruin good with perfect. Don't ruin good with perfect. You know, we don't have to stress about this being just right. And I think that was kind of the note I wrote to myself. And then I went, no, you know what? You're teaching me even one step forward, one step more. You're teaching moms, don't miss all the good in pursuit of perfect. Don't miss all the good that's right there in front of you. Don't miss the good mommy you are in pursuit of trying to be somebody else's vision of the perfect mommy. And so I really want moms to hear that we don't have to miss good with the pursuit of perfect. And I thank you so, so much, Dr. Whitney, for bringing that message to me personally. It's been very encouraging. And I hope other moms can receive that same gift.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. And, you know, if people also want to have like little sips, little tastes of all of this, we have so much free content also at Modern Mommy Doc. We hang out on the web. We're at modernmommydoc.com, but then also on my Instagram. We're there consistently trying to give little snippets of encouragement and support and information and resources. So that's another place to you know, if you are wanting to get just a taste of it first before you go out and dive into the book, you can kind of get the cliff notes there as well.
Excellent.
So I just wanted to say that as a scientist, I'm not as touchy-feely as Terry is. And so what spoke to me in your book was the importance that you place on using your commute well. That is a task that is super stressful to me as a working mom. And COVID actually gave me a break from that, right? I've been able to not commute. And so, but I loved that you recognized that there are those of us who just are overwhelmed by all of the variables that impact us on the commute, and to be able to be intentional about how we use that was a personal message to me. So Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. I do try to be in all of my work, and especially in this book, not so black and white for people too around time boundaries that maybe someone else thinks is a good idea for you. So, for example, there are some people who would say like, oh no, your commute should be only you listening to like happy music and not getting anything done, or not, you know, or like you don't use the car ever, or weekends should be 100% off limits, or nothing that you ever do at night. And I actually don't buy into that. I know that for myself and for many working moms, if they can get a few things off of their mental load at a time that works well for them, it allows them then to be more focused and be more present with their kids, for example, or with their families or for themselves. And so I think you're 100% right, Amy, that we all have our own journeys with this, and that the book offers suggestions for ways that have worked for me personally and for other moms I've worked with. But I hope also opens the doors and allows people to think a little bit more broadly about what might work for them specifically.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jinx. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, nine, ten.
So I want to pivot before we run out of time, because we are getting close.
Yeah.
And just ask you a couple personal questions that we like to ask all of our Brainy Moms guests. And so the first one is, if you could go back in time, kind of like have a do-over, what words of encouragement would you say to yourself as a new mom? Mm-hmm.
So I think the biggest thing that I would say to myself as a new mom is you're already there. Like, you don't have to live your whole life waiting for life to happen. You're in this moment right now. Don't miss the thing that's happening right in front of you, for the thing that you are planning, for the thing that you are worried about, for the thing that you want more, for this vision that you have for your life. I care about those things. I think it's important to have goals. I think it's important to have self-reflection. But if we're constantly in our minds in the past or in the present, it makes it so that we're unable to appreciate all of the good that is in front of us, like you were saying, Terry. Yeah. And it also makes it so that we're unable to really understand for us why, when we're not okay, why that's happening. Mm-hmm. Because we kind of push it aside and like move forward and fill our schedules with more productivity in order to kind of push that away. So I think the biggest thing that if I was to go back would be just to say, like, you're here in this moment. What are the things you can appreciate about it? What are the things you can accept are really hard? And what things can you change now? What things do you need to just leave as they are and kind of wait to pass?
I love that. When I was a new mom, I was really struggling to lose the last 10 pounds of baby weight. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so that's all I could focus on. You know, my son was 6 months old and I had 10 pounds to go. And so I just wanted to run and run and run until those pounds melted off. And I finally woke up one day and said, you know what? Your life doesn't begin when you lose those 10 pounds. Your life is right now and you're missing it.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so your words absolutely spoke to me about that for sure.
Yeah. You know, my littlest one, I was going to say just really quick that she, you know, she's almost five and she still has that little baby voice a tiny bit, like that little toddler voice a little, and it's going to be gone so soon. And the other night I was reading her book. So we were like singing songs back and forth. I was just reminding myself like, okay, just like soak this in, because she gets all riled up and she has those like toddler tantrum things that can get at you, but like, you're never going to get that voice back again. Yeah. So
yes.
Yeah. I think, you know, to what you're saying, right? This is the moment kind of to capture.
Don't miss it. And so finally, do you have a favorite product or indulgence that you're really enjoying right now that we can share with our listeners?
Oh yes. Well, I mean, I think my favorite product, my favorite indulgence is always almond croissants. So if anyone ever wants to send me a box of almond croissants, like, I'm all about it. So give me the almond croissants. And then the other favorite product that I use all the time, honestly, is my AirPods. I love AirPods, because it really does help me with when there are moments when I'm in meetings, like for don't tell my pediatric director, just this, when there are moments that I'm in meet, I know they're going to, they can hear this. Anybody hears, but I'm in a meeting or I'm in something that I actually do not need to be like fully mm-hmm. present for, you know, I talk in the book about not multitasking all the time, but the one time that actually is okay to multitask is when you have like one kind of mindless task happening and another one that's mindless at the same time that you're doing.
Sure.
Yeah. And so the AirPods help me to like fold the laundry while I'm listening to someone in a meeting that I can be actively with my mind there, but they don't expect me to be on camera or looking at them.
Right.
And so the AirPods help me get a ton done in that way. And I also use my AirPods when I'm outside, like in my garden, you know, listening to music that I really like to listen to or podcast or whatnot. So AirPods and almond croissants.
Okay, where do you get your almond croissants? What's the best almond croissant?
Ooh, okay. So in Portland, there's this place called Nouvray that is a French bakery that was the first place that we went after my first daughter was born. We left the hospital.
Oh.
My husband's like gripping the steering wheel, yelling at all the other cars because he's so nervous. He had this newborn in the back. And so we go there. And that's probably our favorite place, but we've actually started to make them at home. My husband is quite the little chef. And so, I'm not, I talked about that in the book, but on the weekends when we have time with the kids, we have all these little YouTube videos that we watch that are about making French pastries. And he likes to do that with the kids, while I'm doing something else. So then I get to enjoy it later.
That's so fun.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll get some this Sunday, right?
Yes. Mother's Day.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So we're out of time. This has been a fantastic conversation today. Yeah. I would like to thank our guest, Dr. Whitney Caceres. If you'd like to connect with Dr. Whitney, you can follow her on social media under the handle Modern Mommy Doc. And her new book, The Working Mom Blueprint, Winning at Parenting Without Losing Yourself, published by the American Academy of Pediatrics, was released today. You can find a link to it and her other book under the Brainy Books tab on our website, brainymoms.co, and in the show notes or through your favorite bookseller. So thanks so much for listening. If you liked our show today, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media at The Brainy Moms. And until next time, look, we know you're busy moms and we're busy moms. So we're out.
See ya.